And good morning, with the voice of Neil Young and Promise of the Real, the Monsanto years ringing in your ears. This is Paul Rowan with Wednesday Talk Radio once again. Is Monsanto going to have their comeuppance? We shall see. They're in a courtroom now in San Francisco, and my guest is attending that trial and covering it. Wrote an article for The Guardian, came out yesterday, I believe. And her name is Carrie Gillum, and she is a longtime investigative journalist, researcher, and writer with more than 20 years of experience in the news industry prior to joining U.S. Right to Know, where she is their research director. Gillum spent 17 years as a senior correspondent for Reuters International News Service. In that role, she specialized in coverage of food and agriculture, with a particular focus on the rise of biotech crop technology, associated pesticide product development, and the environmental impacts of both. In that role, she developed an in-depth knowledge of leading agrochemical companies that include Monsanto, Dow, AgroSciences, DuPont, et cetera, and she's with us on the line from San Francisco. Good morning, Carrie.
Good morning, Paul.
Thank you so much for being with us. I just found out about this trial, kind of to my chagrin. I like to think I'm informed about what's going on, but hey, there's so much going on, as we know. And this must be a really big deal for you, who've been covering this stuff for so long, I imagine.
Right. If you've been doing it as long as I have, you know, this is like going to the circus or something. You know, I'm a glyphosate geek, I guess. There's a few of us out there. But, you know, it's a pretty important issue. It's a big deal. This chemical that's in Roundup herbicide is ubiquitous. It's found in our food, our air, our water, our own bodies. It's the most widely used agrochemical in history. It's made billions of dollars for Monsanto and other companies, but of course it's also been linked to non-Hodgkin lymphoma and other diseases and illnesses in people, as well as environmental damage. So, you know, this hearing to bring all this evidence into a public court and elicit sworn testimony from expert scientists is a pretty important thing for those of us who follow this and care about this issue.
Well, I'm glad you did say the word glyphosate, because in my introduction I failed to say what is actually going on, which is, I'm not sure the nature of the court case. I know that in your article for The Guardian, which I linked to on my program page, kbo.fm/Wednesday Talk Radio, which I encourage people to go to, more than 3,000 plaintiffs have been suing Monsanto, alleging exposure to Roundup caused them or family members to develop non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And take us to the genesis of this. What is the nature of this case going on? How did it start? Who started it?
Sure. This is mass tort litigation, but just a little bit of background. So as I said, glyphosate is a chemical. It's a weed-killing agent, a synthetic chemical that is used in Roundup products, Roundup herbicides, as well as hundreds of other products that are sold around the world, you know, that we use to kill weeds in our yards or, you know, gardens, golf courses. It's used in parks and playgrounds. And, of course, farmers use it in agriculture pretty widely. It's used to grow more than 100 different food crops. And it's sprayed directly on many types of crops, and there are residues left in our food and it's in our water, as I said. So it's a pretty important and widespread and pervasive pesticide. Now, over the years, a number of scientists have examined it through toxicology research, epidemiology, and other research explorations, and the body of evidence has built to be somewhat worrisome to some scientists. And 3 years ago, the International Agency for Research on Cancer declared it to be a probable human carcinogen with a specific positive association to non-Hodgkin lymphoma. And that triggered all of these lawsuits then from people who've been using Roundup for years, thinking it was as safe as Monsanto told them it was, but have developed this terrible cancer, this non-Hodgkin lymphoma. So there are 3,500 plaintiffs now, roughly, suing Monsanto around the United States. And this hearing in San Francisco represents about 365, a little bit more than that, of those lawsuits that have been brought together under the federal court here in San Francisco. And this is not actually a trial. This is sort of the first step where the judge is examining the scientific evidence, basically to determine if the plaintiffs can go forward to a jury trial. He wants to make sure that they have sufficient scientific evidence behind their claims.
So I don't know, you know, how much it seems like the judge, the individual judge, does make a fair amount of difference in cases like this. Do you know anything about this Vince Chabria? Is that how you pronounce his name?
Well, Chabria.
Chabria.
Chabria. I'm not exactly sure. I think I do. You know, he was appointed by Obama. You know, he's youngish. He's considered very, you know, well-respected and well-regarded. This is his first MDL, his first multi-district litigation, where you're handling hundreds of lawsuits, you know, all at once. And he's been really pushing a pretty speedy progression of this in terms of discovery and turning over evidence and moving it forward. So, you know, he wants to get this behind him. He's a no-nonsense kind of guy. He's pretty tough. Watching him there in the courtroom, he's, you know, chewing on people and demanding some solid answers. So, you know, we'll see. It's I know plaintiffs' attorneys say they're a little bit worried about him, but I think maybe Monsanto's attorneys are as well. So maybe that indicates good balance, right?
Well, I just want to step back a second. There's a related event coming up tomorrow that I didn't announce at the outset. See the Untold Story, Film and Conversation, 7 o'clock tomorrow evening, Thursday, at the Clinton Street Theater. That's Southeast 26th and Clinton in Portland. It's going to be the film director, Taggart Siegel, and folks from Bee Friendly Portland, Pollinator Collective, and Cultivate Oregon are going to be there. And it's all about saving and protecting seeds. So check that out tomorrow at Clinton Street Theater, co-sponsored by KABU. And also, of course, those of you who listen regularly to KABU know that we are in our a Kickstarter campaign, kind of a innovative for us, a new way of raising funds, not quite as demanding on your ears. We don't talk about it quite so much as we do in our regular membership drives. It's kind of an experiment, so help us make it successful. We need to get something like $4,000 more by Friday in order to get the entire cache of money. That's the way Kickstarter works. So we'd appreciate if you could help us out with whatever you can. Go to kbo.fm Kickstarter and help us out that way. That's kbo.fm/Kickstarter. Got that out of the way. This is a Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm with Carrie Gillum, Research Director of U.S. Right to Know. Maybe you could tell us right off the bat a little about U.S. Right to Know before we go on.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for asking. U.S. Right to Know is a pretty young and small research organization. We're a nonprofit based in California, although I'm based in Kansas in farm country. But what we do is really try to, you know, live up to the name that people have a right to know about, you know, their food, the food system, the ingredients, the chemicals that are used, and how it affects the health and the environment, you know, of our families and our world. And what we do primarily is file a lot of Freedom of Information Act requests. I sued the EPA last year for not complying with a Freedom of Information Act request. You know, these government agencies, public universities, public agencies, state agencies are supposed to be accountable to the public. We pay their salaries, and they're supposed to be working on our behalf in the public interest and to protect public safety. And as I'm sure your listeners know, all too often that doesn't happen, you know, and corporations and large interest organizations who are powerful and have a lot of money behind them get the ear of our regulators and our lawmakers much more easily than do, you know, individuals and consumers. And so we're trying to kind of balance out the narrative and the discussion and give ammunition to people who want to protect their families. So we dig up information from agencies and universities and share it with the public and with other journalists to write about.
Well, I know this is of great interest to a lot of people in the Portland area. The March on Monsanto happened and for a number of years. I'm not sure if it's still happening, but I know there was a large presence here in Portland. I attended a couple. It's been a few years back, and I know we cover these issues quite a bit here. So if this is new to you, you have a chance to ask Kerry Gillum questions. The number to call in is 503-231-8187. I know you've got to get to court again, so you may have to cut out a little early. Just give us a little bit of forewarning on that when you do. And so take us to the courtroom itself. What happened?
Yeah, so the first day was Monday. This hearing, I want to call it hearings because it's every day, but it's sort of one event, began on Monday and runs through Friday, and it's referred to as a Daubert hearing because of the precedent that allows for the handling of this type of scientific testimony, or the judge refers to it as Science Week. And really, it's a lineup. You know, there's a lot of attorneys in there. Monsanto's got a lot of attorneys. The plaintiffs have a lot of attorneys. There are journalists from overseas are there covering this. And then we have a lot of scientists. And these are people who are considered to be, you know, top-notch in the world on both sides, you know, for Monsanto and for the plaintiffs. And, you know, a lot of it is pretty technical stuff. They're getting up there talking about different epidemiology studies that have been done over the years. They haven't moved really to toxicology yet, but the toxicology experts are due up later today and tomorrow. And it's a lot of direct testimony and then cross-examination. And the judge is, you know, really asking some pretty tough questions. You know, but the evidence so far has been these experts saying, look, when you put all these studies together, there's a very clear trend line, a very clear association between this disease, non-Hodgkin lymphoma, and glyphosate exposure or exposure to Roundup. So, you know, and Monsanto, of course, is trying to tear down the credibility of the scientists and to challenge them on a lot of these different issues. I mean, it's pretty intense sometimes to watch this courtroom battle unfold. But we'll see. This is day three, starting at 10 a.m. Pacific time. So
this is
it'll be interesting.
It seems like it seems new that I know. Well, you have a book out called Whitewash, The Story of a Weed Killer, Cancer, and the Corruption of Science. And I know this whole issue of, you know, there's a 1983 EPA study that Monsanto has done everything they can to kind of keep on the shelves that indicated way back then the kind of connections you're talking about. You know, they do all sorts of they attempt to they try to flood the journals with their own studies. They, you know, there's the same kind of things that went on with the tobacco industry, this going on with the climate issue. It's very, seems like this is a very common thing for big corporations to dig in their heels and do everything they can to actually keep the science out of the courtroom. So this is very new and unusual, this hearing in the court, right? Is this the first time?
Right, and that's sort of the point that I made in the Guardian article, that this is a rare opportunity, perhaps you could say historic, for the public to get to see the science laid out and explained and analyzed by experts under oath. And the judge is even having these hearings throughout these 5 days recorded, video recorded, and it will be posted to a website where the public and other judges around the country can view it. And they're providing transcripts, you know, every day for people to read. So this is really a very public way to examine the science about this very prolific pesticide. And I applaud that. I think that this is an amazing move forward for truth and transparency, and this is what we need to have all of the time. You know, you shouldn't have to go 40 years with a pesticide on the market and thousands of people finally suing after they get cancer to have this kind of transparency. But you know, this is what it takes. And the lawsuits themselves have revealed so much already through discovery, because Monsanto has had to turn over, they estimate, about 10 million pages of documents, internal emails and reports and communications about its handling and knowledge of Roundup and glyphosate. And what you see in those, as I document in my book and as I've explained, you know, in many interviews, you see a history of deceptive tactics by Monsanto, very clear and strategic efforts to deceive the public and farmers and regulators, and to manipulate the scientific assessments, you know, to be deceitful. So I can't sit here and say I have documents and I know it causes cancer. You know, I'm not a cancer scientist, but I can say definitively we have documentation that Monsanto has been extraordinarily deceptive about this chemical. And that involves ghostwriting research review papers. It involves funneling money to academics and scientists to proclaim the safety of its chemical while hiding any affiliation with Monsanto. You know, cutting and pasting information from Monsanto files into documents that bear no name, you know, no identity from Monsanto. I mean, it just, it goes on and on and on. And their attack of scientists, you know, they have strategic plans that we've obtained from inside the company where they lay out their strategic plans to try to discredit scientists who find, you know, harm with this chemical. And even their own scientists, even people that they've hired who raise red flags with the chemical, they, rather than pay attention, they try to shut them down and figure out how to, you know, get them to be quiet. And you're right. I mean, we see this with other companies, other industries, you know, but it's important to pay attention to this because, again, this is a pesticide that's found very commonly in our food and our water and in our own bodies. If you have your urine tested, you probably have some of this weed killer in your urine.
Yeah, you know, I, you know, driving around my car or on the bus or walking, even walking in my neighborhood, just a block and a half away, I was walking around, and I saw a guy with a little thing on a little sprayer spraying the, you know, the cracks, you know, between the curb and the street. You know, he's got to get those little plants, and I'm sure that was all, you know, close to 90% chance that was Roundup. And and you know, he got very defensive. You know, most of us probably don't make comments. I think we should make comments. I'm always trying, it's always a challenge, you know, what's the best way? And I say, well, you know that does end up in the water. And I was kind of like fuming, but I think people should take more, you know, responsibility as we go by, even, you know, maybe shouting out something out the window of your car. I don't know, just anything, just not let this sort of the normalcy of the massive use of that stuff just go on.
Right. Yeah. I mean, as the point of my book and my research and what I try to point out to people is that glyphosate is the most pervasive agrochemical, and Monsanto is, you know, the big bad company that we all know in the global, you know, conglomerate that sells this pesticide and the genetically modified seeds. But if you take them out, we still have a very big problem. We have chlorpyrifos, which is an insecticide that is manufactured and distributed by Dow Chemical, that is known to cause brain damage, neurodevelopmental harm to young children. And it is prolific. It is the fourth most prevalent pesticide found in our food right now, according to FDA data. And it was scheduled to be banned last year because it's known to be so dangerous. And EPA scientists have said, we can't vouch for the safety of this in food and water. And yet Dow Chemical gave some money to the Trump Inaugural Fund and went and sat down with EPA and the new Trump administration, and the ban went away. And it's still on the market. So that's just another example. But this happens over and over and over, and we have allowed this pesticide sort of dependent food system and pesticide laden environment to proliferate under the pressure of the people who are profiting from these pesticides. And it is contributing, our leading scientists in our government and elsewhere will tell you, it's contributing to cancers. Certain pediatric cancers are on the rise. One in every two men are expected to be diagnosed with cancer in their lifetimes. Pesticides are part of the environmental contaminants that we know contribute to cancer and disease. And unless we get a handle on this and balance this out and require our regulators to be accountable for public health and protecting public health, you know, it's not going to get any better. And I'm guessing probably all of them know someone or have had cancer themselves. I mean, it's far too common now.
And you just heard the voice of Kerry Gillam, who's a longtime investigative journalist now with U.S. Right to Know, which is a nonprofit working for transparency and accountability in our food system. And she's talking about a monumental case, a historic case going on in San Francisco, a hearing to see whether these plaintiffs, some 3,500 around the United States, who are suing Monsanto, alleging exposure to Roundup caused them or their family members to develop non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. There's a hearing to see whether that will go to trial, and that is going on right now in San Francisco in about an hour, you said. And as I mentioned, that she'll have to be leaving us possibly a little early, so if you do want to get your question or comment in, you might want to start thinking about formulating it now and calling into the number 503-231-8187. You mentioned this organization that classified glyphosate as a probable carcinogen. It kind of went right by me. I have it written down, though. I think, is that you're talking about the International Agency for Research on Cancer?
Oh, yeah. Yes, you got that right.
And I also noticed that you, in the mention of it in your article, once again, for The Guardian, headlined, Monsanto says its pesticides are safe. Now a court wants to see the proof, came out on Monday. And you can find the link to that again on my program page, kbo.fm/Wednesday Talk Radio. You said that the House Committee on Science, Space, and Technology actually held a hearing on February 6th, no doubt at Monsanto's behest, to complain about that and actually talk about defunding the International Agency for Research on Cancer. What was the upshot of that hearing, do you know?
Well, yes, and if we have time, do we have time for a little background on that?
Yeah, go ahead. Got time.
Because it's certainly interesting. So, as I said, IARC, this International Agency for Research on Cancer, is part of the World Health Organization, and these are independent cancer scientists from around the world who examine different substances to determine whether or not they're a carcinogenicity hazard, whether or not they could cause cancer. And glyphosate came up on their roster to check this out. Monsanto, even before IARC met, you can see through internal documents that Monsanto started discussing how worried they were about these scientists examining the research on their chemical. And they have documents planning how to attack IARC again, even before IARC met. Monsanto predicted that they would get a probable or possible carcinogenicity classification from IARC, because they knew of the science, and they laid out their strategy for how they were going to discredit these scientists, and they called it orchestrate outcry against these scientists. And part of that plan was convincing Republicans and lawmakers in the U.S. That IARC was deeply flawed and was corrupt and was relying on junk science and was politically motivated. And they have been working over the last 3 years to get lawmakers to do exactly that, to discredit IARC. And so this hearing on February 6th was the House Science, Space, and Technology Committee, led by Republican from Texas, Lamar Smith. And he essentially read down all of the talking points that Monsanto has put forward to discredit this international agency, and called for defunding this international group of cancer scientists. And the Republicans brought in three witnesses, and they allowed the opposition, I guess, or the Democrats, to bring in one witness who tried to defend the scientists at the International Agency for Research on Cancer. But again, it's all sort of a very politically motivated, politically driven propaganda effort to discredit these scientists who are trying to raise the red flag about a particular chemical. Again, these scientists didn't say you need to ban it. They didn't propose any sort of policy response whatsoever. They simply said our review of the science shows this to be a probable human carcinogen. And ever since that time, they've been under assault by Monsanto and Monsanto affiliates, and now our own lawmakers in Washington. So to me, that, you know, that is quite outrageous, because our lawmakers, again, are supposed to be protecting us, right? The public, not the the profits of these big corporations.
Oh, really? I actually thought that was the case.
Yeah.
No. It certainly seems to be. Anyway, you are listening to KBOO. I'm Paul Rowland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I have as my guest on the phone from San Francisco, Carrie Gillum, is talking about this case, hearing, a series of hearings going on this week in San Francisco, bringing Monsanto into the courtroom and more into the public eye, and bringing it more closely, having to face the scrutiny of scientists that they've been trying to squirm out of for decades now. Perhaps this will actually be a breach in that solid wall that they've been able to create. I just want to let you know that coming up this morning on KBOO at 9, The Politics of Living features women's voices and opinions on political and cultural issues. At 10, Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary, flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein, as usual, at 10:15. And at 11, The Bike Show looks at just how effective biketivism can be at achieving social change. And just another reminder to support our Kickstarter. Go to kbo.fm/Kickstarter and help KBOO build a city of media makers, which simply means, it means that you calling in can help us in this project. You calling in with news, questions, points about this topic and others. People sometimes call into our news line at our main office line, and then extension 203 with their tips. People can volunteer and become news producers, become part of our news team. People can actually volunteer and help me with this program or other public affairs, learn how to do the kind of on-air interviews that I do. All this is possible, but we need a steady source of financial as well as other support from you, our listeners, who appreciate us. So we're doing a little experiment for the first time using the Kickstarter approach to as part of our winter fundraising. So go to kbo.fm/Kickstarter and kick in whatever you can. Okay, so once again, so we got a caller who didn't want to go on the air, but wants to know more about how they can get a hold of the video and transcript from this hearing.
Well, that's a great question. So the transcript, the easiest way, I guess, is to go to our website, U.S. Right to Know. We are posting, I am posting all the documents. We have actually a specific page called the Monsanto Papers, and we have posted, I've lost track, thousands of pages of the court documents in this case, so that the public can see them and read them for themselves. And these are, you know, things that are all filed by the plaintiffs as well as things that are filed by Monsanto. Because if you go to the court, you're going to have to get an account. You're going to have to pay money to download these documents. So we pay the money and we put them up there for you to look at for free. And I think that's the best way. There's no, you know, we don't edit them at all. It's just exactly what both sides are laying out. So the transcript is up there. All the recent documents are up there. And we're also, you'll see on the website, I'm trying my best to live blog. This is what we call it. So, you know, every hour or 45 minutes I'm posting from the hearing sort of what the testimony is and what is happening, and a couple of videos and that sort of thing. So usrtk.org, www.usrtk, for U.S. Right to Know.org, will get you to all of that. The video recording of the actual hearings will not be available until after the hearings conclude on Friday. Monsanto asked the judge not to make it available on a live basis or even on a daily basis for some reason. So the judge has agreed to wait until after the hearing before they post that. But that'll also be, we'll put that also on usrighttoknow.org.
So www.usrtk.org. Okay. And as I said, yeah. I have a lot of this information on my program page. There's a link to that organization as well there, kbo.fm/Wednesday Talk Radio. Liz had called in, but somehow that connection got lost. So if you want to call back, let's go right to Shanti. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Carrie. Thank you for the work you do.
Thank you.
What can we do? What would you say is the things which people can get involved in that will make any kind of difference?
Great question, and I get that a lot. It depends on, of course, your level of concern, your energy level, right? Your ability to engage. I've seen very successful moves by people like in Irvine and elsewhere around the country, just on a localized basis, kind of getting together with neighbors or friends or colleagues and going perhaps to their school board or their city council and saying, look at the evidence. We don't want these pesticides sprayed in the parks where our kids play or, you know, on our neighborhood community, you know, green spaces. It's about being informed and making choices. Some people want to change the way they eat. Some people want to migrate to organic options, which, you know, synthetic pesticides like glyphosate are not allowed to be used in the production of organic food. So, and other people are marching in Washington, right? I mean, and lobbying and walking the halls of Congress. So it's all about, for me, just trying to give people the information so that they can then make choices for themselves. And I run into a lot of people who say, I don't care. You know, they don't care. They've got bigger issues and they're not going to worry about this. So I'm certainly not here to tell people what to do. I just want to provide the information. But I have seen a lot of people who are making big differences just by uniting and making their voices heard, you know, to our elected officials.
What's the name of the chemical that Dow makes?
Chlorpyrifos. Can I spell it for you? Chlorpyrifos.
Okay.
Chlorpyrifos. But it's an insecticide. As I said, it's used a lot in California. It's sprayed in fruits and vegetables. It's found commonly in sort of these fresh foods that we would feed our kids thinking it's super healthy. But again, the EPA has said we can't vouch for the safety of this in food, even though it's the fourth most prevalent pesticide found in our food, according to the FDA. It's been banned for household use because we know it's so dangerous to children. But yet we're allowing it to continue to be used because Dow, you know, carries sway with the administration. So that's a big deal. That one is a really big deal as well.
Okay. Yes, this is just on weeds and stuff?
Chlorpyrifos?
Yeah.
You cut out it. I'm sorry. No, it's an insecticide to kill, you know, pests, insect pests. So
okay,
they would be spray.
Food.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for calling, Shanti.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And,
I mean, for go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, finish your thought. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I don't think people realize the level of pesticide residues that are found in our foods. One of most recent USDA report examining 10,000 food samples found pesticide residues on 85% of the foods. And the foods that carry the highest residues are typically fresh fruits and vegetables. And strawberries typically can carry more than 20 different pesticides, residues of more than 20 different pesticides. Because they're used so pervasively, and it's the companies that are making money off these pesticides have gotten our government to agree to allow ever higher uses, ever higher levels. We allow much higher levels of pesticides in our foods than are allowed in Europe, for instance, and many other countries around the world.
Well, Liz is back. Let's go right to Liz. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. Good morning. thank you for your program, and thank you for your work. We just wanted to mention a product that we use on weeds, white vinegar. We have found that it is as effective as Roundup and lasts just as long. And the only thing we would say is that if you put it on weeds next to a plant that you want, it will sometimes bleed over to that plant and affect the other plant. So then we use a spray bottle, you know. You can't just like pour it just on weeds in your garden. But it's really effective. White vinegar, $2 to $3 a gallon, you know, in the market.
All right.
So that's it.
Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a good point. I mean, there are many people, and there are actually some products on the market and coming to market that are essentially vinegar-based, you know, some right. high levels of intensity of the vinegar. I'll tell you, I've tried it myself. Boy, you don't want to get it on your skin. It's intense.
Well, you don't want to get Roundup on your skin.
Well, exactly, like all of the stuff you have to be careful with. But okay. people have told me mixing the vinegar with some dish soap is considered pretty effective, I think. But yeah, there are folks that are coming to market now with some commercial grade vinegar-based herbicides that they're very excited about.
And I want to get this in before you have to leave. You were talking about California and pesticides, and I noticed that in your Guardian article you mentioned as well that just on February 26th, Monsanto and I'm sure other corporations won an injunction blocking California from going ahead with requiring cancer warnings on glyphosate products. I know that we lost just by a whisker a GMO right to know labeling initiative here a couple years back, and these glyphosate use and GMOs are linked. Talk about what happened with that injunction and where you think that's going to go and how that fits in with the overall campaign to block glyphosate use.
Yeah, so this is a big deal in California, right? California is always so proactive, it seems, and more protective of public interest. But California regulators, we call them OEHA, but environmental regulators, followed the IARC classification for glyphosate as a probable carcinogen with the decision to list glyphosate as known to cause cancer. By the state of California, and that doesn't do anything to ban the product. It just simply requires transparency for consumers, and so it would require products that carry glyphosate to have a warning on them, essentially. And of course, you know, Monsanto doesn't want a warning on its products, and other companies that sell glyphosate-based products do not as well. And so Monsanto sued the state of California. They were not successful initially, but then they brought this additional lawsuit and they roped in different agricultural organizations and did succeed, just as you said, in February with getting an injunction to block California from requiring products to carry a warning. They don't want any sort of, you know, issue on these products that might alert customers to the fact that they need to protect themselves.
Now, was that the first attempt in the United States by a state or a locality to require such warnings?
I believe it is, in terms of a widespread labeling of a warning like that. And you made a good connection to the GMO labeling. Again, that's an issue of transparency, simply alerting customers or consumers to, you know, how a food is made or what ingredients it might have. And the industry, Monsanto and others in the food industry, really didn't want consumers to have that information. And they said at the time, we don't want people to know if they're genetically modified ingredients because people won't buy it. We know that people will choose to buy other things, and so we don't want them to have that information. So they're at least transparent about the fact that they don't want to be transparent.
I just want to mention, if anyone does want to get in a last question here, you better do it now, 503-231-8187. We really appreciate Carrie Gillum's taking time. She's got to get to the courtroom for what she's been talking about, which is this hearing on the Monsanto's on the science behind the designation internationally by this International Agency for Research on Cancer that it is a probable carcinogen, and the digging their heels of most regulatory bodies and the corporations to not allow that designation to go forward and to possibly limit or ban the use of glyphosate products, including Roundup. And of course, as you're mentioning, these other dangerous chemicals like chlorpyrifos and others, this obviously might have ramifications on others as well. So I'm sure the chemical industry as a whole is watching this very closely, would you not say?
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely a very pivotal point, this hearing. If the judge allows this to go forward, the attorneys fully expect many hundreds, if not thousands, of more people to file lawsuits. And it could possibly affect the pending merger between Bayer and Monsanto. You know, you're looking at potentially, you know, millions, hundreds of millions of dollars in potential liability if Monsanto, you know, if a jury was to find that Monsanto had indeed known and hidden the risks of this particular chemical. And the case is already having ramifications in Europe. We haven't even talked about Europe, but the documents that have come out showing this deception by Monsanto and showing manipulation and sort of alleged collusion with the EPA, we haven't even talked about that, but there are documents that show really close connections and collaborations with high-level EPA officials to downplay or to hide scrutiny of this chemical. And in Europe, they're really worried about this, and the European Parliament voted in October actually to ban glyphosate. Now, the European Commission, in a last-minute, odd vote that was swung by the German ag minister, and where Bayer is based in Germany, squeaked through a five-year reapproval for glyphosate in Europe. But the chemical industry wanted 15 years, and they only got five. And Germany's looking to ban it now. France, Italy, you know, they're very wary of this chemical and others over in Europe, and they have much more protective policies for human health. But here in the United States, our lawmakers and regulators are giving it a green light and allowing more uses of it, in fact.
Do you have time for another question or two?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. Maria, let's go to Maria right away. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi. I am a researcher. I'm a plant pathologist, and I work for ornamental plant production. And I have seen this throughout my career, what you see on the effect on workers, especially the ones that we are labeled here as Latino, right? And I appreciate very much your work. It's amazing and very sad on the other hand, because in this country, I mean, first a developed country with all the tools, the knowledge and the power, we the people do not stop the government from doing this, right? Because everywhere else, starting in Europe, people have stand up and said, no, you cannot apply this to my food or to the flowers, right? So, but here we just are numb and don't do anything. I mean, the
That's
public,
exactly
right?
Right.
I appreciate your work. I work kind of in that area, not directly with pesticides. I work with irrigation and nutrients, but it's all related, right? And we recirculate our water in plant nurseries.
Well, thank you for calling, Maria. So we don't have much time, but Carrie, to speak to that issue of the effect on agricultural workers specifically.
Well, agricultural workers, of course, are on the front lines, right? They are applying these pesticides, not only glyphosate, but a whole array of insecticides, fungicides, weed killers. And, I mean, they are known to be in a dangerous position. There are requirements for them to wear protective gear in many cases, you know, and to adhere to certain requirements for application so as not to expose neighboring populations, not to spray aerially, for instance, under certain conditions. You have to watch wind speed and that kind of thing. I mean, there is a framework to try to protect both the farm workers and people in you know, neighboring areas. But what we see all too often is that those protective, you know, requirements or frameworks don't get adhered to. And especially with glyphosate, because Monsanto has campaigned for more than 40 years that this is so safe, that it's safer than table salt, that it's safe enough to drink. And so a lot of the people who have sued and who have developed non-Hodgkin lymphoma, or their family members who've lost their loved, you know, they didn't wear protective gear. It was safe enough to drink. You know, they would strap on a backpack applicator and walk through their orchards or their farm fields or whatever around their yard and spray this. And it's shown to absorb into the skin, dermal absorption rates, and get into the body and the blood system. And you know, it's been a dangerous situation. And what we see, I want to point out, as the caller mentioned, we fight back. Our lawmakers and regulators seem to fight back against our own scientists. We have Linda Birnbaum, who's the head of the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, who just in December, she and some colleagues published some new papers basically crying out and saying, our science is not, we're not keeping up with this risk to our health. We're not protecting the public. We need to do better with these chemicals because they are endangering our children and our families. She's the head of our National Institute of Environmental Sciences and our National Toxicology Program. And what happened? Republicans in Congress called for her to be investigated because they said she was lobbying, because she was calling for protective public policy. She was lobbying illegally, and they've asked for an investigation into her now. And it just shouldn't be that way, I don't think. So we do need to inform ourselves and make our voices heard and try to demand some accountability.
Well, you know, I think it's important, you know, you know, we're all, many of us are getting very discouraged by the rollbacks of the flimsy regulations that there have been. There's many rules that have been promulgated by Trump's administration, rolling back a lot of important rules, protecting regulations and rules protecting us from these things. But I think it is important that, you know, people realize that the struggle is continuing and that, you know, people are still making advances. It seems like in the courts, seems like the main really arena of struggle where some success can be had these days.
I think you're right. Yes, people have said that, and it's sad. It shouldn't be that way, that we have to spend 40 years being exposed and then file lawsuits and, you know, go through years of discovery and testimony. But this is the way to hold companies accountable and to really dig into the truth behind the spin. So, you know, we will see what comes out of this court case. But so far, you know, the scientists who've been up so far, of course, have said very definitively, the science shows us, you know, that this is linked to cancer, that this can cause non-Hodgkin lymphoma, and people need to know that and they need to be protected. And that, you know, there are plaintiff's witnesses, so, but that's where we are so far.
Well, I know you did say you need to go, so let me know if you do. If you can stay, we still have another caller or two.
I've got 9 more minutes.
Oh, great.
I have to run.
Okay. Let's go to Taggart. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Carrie. This is Taggart Siegel. I directed Queen of the Sun, What Are the Bees Telling Us? And also Seed, The Untold Story, two films. And in fact, tomorrow night, KBOO is showing Seed, The Untold Story at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. And the reason I'm mentioning that is that pesticides, I don't know if you've seen it, but pesticides have a lot to do with seeds, We know in Hawaii, places like that, where Monsanto, Dow, Syngenta, Bayer, many of the big companies spray 6 out of 7 days a week. In Hawaii, there's been major protests over the years, but they basically are poisoning the land and the water, and people are getting cancer, especially in the Waimea area. So this is a serious problem, but if you would like to come to CC, The Untold Story at Clinton Street Theater, that would be great. Tomorrow at 7 o'clock, there's going to be a Q&A, and it's really to help honeybees and seed keepers and the public.
All right. Thank you for that. Did mention at the outset, glad for that second mention, and hope to see as many of you who are listening there to continue this conversation. Thank you so much for calling in, Taggart. And let's go straight to Ruth. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi. My brother-in-law, a pathologist, told us in 1980 that the government knew farm workers in America were on their third generation of getting cancer just from handling the pesticides, gloves or protective gear or not. And even last year, Mitch McConnell publicly said that Rachel Carson was a troublemaker. So Americans, unfortunately, we believe whatever the big ads tell us. So thank you for the work you're doing, and we all need to wake up. I would be chided by my neighbors older than me for pulling weeds by hand, and they would say, why don't you use Roundup? And I said, because it poisons our water table. It's a no-brainer. So we need to be radical and speak up, because what have we got to lose? Just everything. Thank you for the program, the work you do.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I want to mention, do we have time
for
me to mention? She touched on the farmers, and it's a great point. And there is a study, and it's not one study, it's actually many, many, but the Agricultural Health Study. People can Google that if they want to. This has been going on since 1993, and it's basically our National Cancer Institute, National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, that has been tracking more than 80,000 farmers in Iowa and North Carolina since the 1990s, because we know pesticides are dangerous, and they're trying to determine, you know, what diseases are farmers getting and what pesticides are these linked to. And you can go on there and read the studies and see, but you know, these pesticides are known to cause a variety of things, including Parkinson's and non-Hodgkin lymphoma and an array of different cancers, you know, breast and lung and brain and pancreatic. And so it's not a secret. We know these pesticides cause cancer. We know that farmers are on the front lines, but that others are being exposed as well, as she mentioned, you know, through the water table and the soil. And my book will take you through, if people want to read a book about a weed killer, it takes you through what it does to the soil, what it's doing to our insect population and biodiversity. And, you know, it's not a simple, straightforward thing. It's very complex, but it's very dangerous to our future health. And so it's good that the callers are aware of that and engaged.
And again, the name of that book is Whitewash, The Story of a Weed Killer, Cancer, and the Corruption of Science. And that was written by my guest, Carrie Gillum, who will be continuing to blog from this hearing in the courtroom in San Francisco for the rest of the week, I believe. And you can reach that at www.usrtk.org for U.S. Right to Know. We've got to get out of here in just a second. Thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to reading more and seeing where this case leads.
Yeah, thank you for having me, and thank you for following the case.
All right. That's Carrie Gillum. She's got to run. She's got to go to the courtroom. We've got to run. We've got more great programming here on KBOO Community Radio as that indicates. So kbo.fm/Kickstarter to support us. I'm Paul Rowland. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for more here on KBOO.